Welcome to episode 18. I'm Stuart McCullough. I'm the CEO of VHAA. And beginning this week with the industrial roundup and with community health in particular. On the 26th of April, we meet with a representative of the ASU to talk about a social and community services agreement and where we're up to in that process. There are a small number of points for both parties, the resolution of which may help resolve that particular agreement. We'll have a further update with regards to that in coming weeks. With regards to the allied health professionals, we met with the union on the 3rd of May. Members might recall that we were seeking a response from VAPA as to whether or not some of their claims, which seem to be similar to those made in the public sector, were really to seek the same outcomes or not. We also have a meeting scheduled with HWU. We'll be providing further updates with regards to HWU and VAPA shortly. With regards to the public health services and starting with the nurses agreement, the nurses agreement is now in effect as of late last year, but importantly, dates for the SDPPWG, the working group, have now been set for 2017, and the first of those meetings has been conducted. Also, the OH&S industry group has also had its first meeting and will be meeting throughout the year also. With regards to the other groups, we're still in processes to try and set those meeting dates, including for the allied health professionals and for the HWU. With regards to the allied health professionals, that agreement came into effect on the 3rd of May. The mental health agreement has also been approved and came into effect on the 27th of April. There is an implementation guide available for allied health professionals, and that's available both through the community app and on the website. With regards to mental health, that implementation guide is now available through the website. An EBA forum list and a list of dates for that will soon be available with regards to the mental health agreement. We'll also look to ensure that we film at least one of those and make that available to members who, for some reason, are unable to attend. The drafting process for the medical scientists agreement has now been completed. Thank you to those members who provided their NERRs back to the office. Those are now being reviewed to ensure compliance. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. Joining me this week is Senior Workplace Relations Advisor Daniel Pullen. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you, Stuart.
You know the drill by now. If you would reveal, please, the contents of this week's subject box.
Of course.
For the benefit of those people who are listening rather than watching this particular broadcast, could you describe the object?
It is an Academy Award for our recently awarded Best in Film in the Industrial Relations category.
That's a very nice try. I have to admit that this is really more the product of a slight clerical error on my part. When we had a list of the subject items, this one is described as what are the actions arising from the Health and Allied Services Managers and Administrative Workers Agreement. I had misunderstood that as the actors. So this particular statuette for Best Actor really represents the actions under that particular agreement.
Wonderful.
So can we start with the implementation guide, which has been a little while coming?
It has.
Where is the implementation guide up to?
So members would have noted that they would have received communication via the VHA community app within the last week, that the implementation guide has been posted on the VHIA community app and is also available via the My IR link for Health and Allied Manager and Admin as well.
Is that in its final form or still in draft form?
That will be in its final form.
And in terms of the process that's resulted in that amended and new implementation guide, what was the process to develop it?
We sought feedback from membership as well as the Health Workers Union with respect to the implementation guide. Membership gave feedback that there may not have been enough information with instigating the changes that can be quite complex. So we took that on board and sought to amend the draft implementation guide that we sought some feedback from our members and the union and amended that, sought feedback again from our membership and from the union, and we've been able to reissue the implementation guide in its final format.
So I think it's worth emphasising that that is now our standard practice. where we develop implementation guides to support the agreements that we do that in consultation with members, but also the relevant union or unions.
Correct.
And in terms of the use of that implementation guide, how would you recommend that members utilise that document?
So I think what members should be utilising that for is sitting down with their payroll team and their HR and employer relation partners, developing possibly an implementation group or an implementation team at the line level, even with operational leaders, and working through the items to implement over the next 4 years.
And I also understand that these are generally quite a useful tool in the agreement implementation committees, the ones that the unions participate in.
Correct. We would see it as the most upfront document to begin with during an agreement implementation committee process.
Particularly when it's had the opportunity for input from the union.
Correct.
You mentioned before about the input from members, and I know that we have an agreement implementation committee, an EBA reference group that we've utilised. Just in terms of the EBA reference group, what's the history of that group?
So the reference group originally was amalgamated during the bargaining process where feedback was sought from our membership with respect to matters that were put forward by the union and to be put forward by VHIA on behalf of the hospitals during the bargaining process. What VHIA have sought to do following the bargaining process, and this EBA has been in effect since December, is to continue that process and continue to seek feedback and continue to provide assistance to our membership and seek feedback from our membership on the areas that are challenging and ways that we can improve in the next round of bargaining as well.
So that EBA reference group that was established for the purposes of negotiations continues on?
Correct.
And who is a part of that EBA reference group?
So it's made up by volunteers. A lot of those people are operational and HR and employee relation leaders within their relevant organisations. They're all from our membership and we have representation from Metropolitan, Rural and Regional Health Services.
I think it's worth emphasising that the makeup of those groups include not just the metros but also the Rural and Regional Health Services.
They're very welcome participants.
And what is the job of that EBA reference group specifically?
As I mentioned before, we seek their feedback on draft documentation that will be going out to the wider membership. They're also our key point of call when it comes to gauging any difficulties that our membership are having other than through our advice line service. But we would go to our membership and ask for any specific issues that they're having, for example, with the nauseous allowance lump sum payment that has previously been processed quite recently, with the upcoming clerical changes as well. So what we would do is we'd provide some draft papers to the reference group, seek their feedback, and that would advise us on rolling that out across our membership.
And some of those draft papers are really materials that are then provided to the field to support implementation or support the application of terms of the agreement.
Correct.
That is, it's more support for applying the agreement in a consistent fashion.
Yes.
And in terms of the key implementation issues, have there been key implementation issues that have presented themselves to date?
I think the membership generally found the implementation of the wage increases not too controversial. What we did find, though, is we've received a lot of feedback about the implementation of the part-time review of hours clause and also the casual conversion clause as well, that membership found it difficult.
Okay. There are other implementation issues that have been identified. Those are two of those implementation issues, and we'll go to those specific clauses in a moment. Just in terms of the work of the EBA reference group and the work that it does and the progress that's being made on those implementation issues, what are the ways in which that's going to be reported back to the broader membership?
So we'll provide that feedback through the HRERIR Director Managers meeting, which occur every month with our Metropolitan members on the first Wednesday of each month and with our Rural and Regional members on the second Wednesday of each month.
And in terms of those, it's worth emphasising there's a written report that precedes that, which will give some update.
Correct.
What are the other mechanisms for communication as to progress?
We provide information through the VHIA community app. The Health and Allied Manager and Admin group on the VHA community app is one of the largest.
It is.
And we want to continue in ensuring that people are members of that app to receive the most up-to-date feedback.
And that's a good way of just getting contemporary information as to what's happened at a particular, say, EBA reference group meeting or a meeting with the union or progress or discussions with the department on a particular issue.
Correct.
In terms of the one of the items there in the implementation plan goes to the issue of the Service Delivery Partnership Plan, and in particular the working group associated with that. So to refresh people's memories, that working group involves ourselves, the department, and HWU as the union party. Have meetings yet been scheduled with respect to the SDPPWG?
They haven't been listed as yet, and we haven't been able to schedule them as yet. We have communicated with the Health Workers Union and the department, and we're awaiting confirmation of a date that's suitable to all parties.
And what frequency will we be proposing?
Once every 2 months.
So that will be something that we update members as we go, particularly, I guess, through the community app, as well as the monthly written updates. There are a couple of clauses I think I find quite interesting in that implementation guide, one of which goes to anti-discrimination and the other goes to multicultural awareness. Mm. That anti-discrimination provision I think is really interesting in that I think it's been a part of previous agreements and people haven't necessarily considered its impact. Mm. But it talks about considering whether or not there is a discriminatory effect in terms of the way an agreement is being implemented, which could, of course, include potential disputes. Mm. And just in terms of that, I think it's worth perhaps suggesting that as part of an implementation process, people consider, make sure that when there is a dispute, they consider whether there is a discrimination component, either in terms of the way the agreement operates or in terms of the proposed interpretation that's being put forward.
I would agree.
Also, I think that multicultural awareness thing is kind of complementary. Mm. It is about factoring into your process the impact of a particular issue so that there isn't an unintended impact, so that people are taking a step back and considering, does this have an impact on culturally sensitive issues or not?
And I think one thing you did touch on is assessing policy and procedure as well, just to ensure that your policies and procedures are up to date to reflect these two updated clauses.
I think it's worth emphasising the importance of those two provisions. Mm. You mentioned before, Daniel, the part-time review of hours, and that is something that's prompted some rather immediate feedback. So what are the issues that are coming up with regards to that particular provision?
I think one of the matters that was found quite difficult for our membership was with respect to the 52 weeks that an employee must be able to identify that they worked above their contracted hours to be entitled to the part-time review of hours. Our membership found it difficult that that may include a period prior to the agreement come into effect. Some of the feedback was that it wasn't absolutely clear in the agreement that the person wouldn't have to wait essentially 52 weeks until December 2017 until they can access the entitlement. The intention of the clause during bargaining was to allow that to happen with immediate effect, and we've been assisting our membership through our advice line function in responding to queries from staff and from the union as well with respect to this clause.
So just to be clear, that 52 weeks is really any 52 weeks.
Correct.
It doesn't need to be 52 weeks from the approval of the agreement.
Correct.
And in terms of any other issues with regards to that, because there is a reasonably straightforward principle that underpins that, it really is about making sure that somebody's regular hours are reflected in their contract of employment.
That's correct, and one of the other important points is that that person must not be taking work that belongs to someone else. That being said, that the person must be picking up additional EFT or available EFT, not covering sick leave or annual leave or a flexible working arrangement or a form of parental leave.
So where those hours don't belong to someone else.
Correct.
And that's a very similar premise to the casual conversion provision.
Correct.
Just in terms of other action points, or actor points if you prefer, that are coming up in 2017, the most obvious one, of course, is wages. What other actions are occurring this year in terms of wages?
So we've got a wage increase from the first full pay period on or after the 1st of October 2017, and that will also include allowance increases as well.
And in terms of the things that should have happened already, what actions should have already occurred by now?
So by now, employers should have paid the once-off lump sum payment that was effective from the first full pay period on or after the commencement of the agreement.
Now, I think a little while ago, in the last couple of weeks, some additional guidance has been issued with regards to that.
That's correct. And also with respect to the wage increase, it was effective from the 1st of October 2016. So health services should have ensured that their pay increases are updated and ensured that the back pay has been processed for those staff.
In terms of allowances, I think it's worth emphasising that the allowances will increase at the same time as the wages. So that's also the first full pay period on or after 1 October 2017.
Correct.
I think it's worth picking out nauseous allowance in particular, the topic of the moment, and the shift away from an intermittent or incidental payment to a lump sum payment for specified occupations, I guess. What are the issues that have arisen with regards to that shift?
And look, some of the feedback we've received from our membership is that there is some confusion around the classifications of staff that are to be paid the nauseous allowance. As the members would be aware, the agreement provides a table of which contains a list of classifications. And some of those classifications have associated roles and classifications that sit around those roles. And an example would be store person. Store person alone has its own classification and its own pay code, and that classification is listed within that table. Store person it can also be classified as a store person alone or a store person advanced, and with their own separate and distinct pay codes, which would lead to that person that is classified as also a store person or a store person alone or a store person advanced, all being entitled to the lump sum nauseous allowance.
Okay, so just to break that down a little bit, we've got the nauseous allowance that is paid to specified classifications. But in terms of those, the list of those occupations, they are categories of occupation, and the various subcategories also receive that lump sum payment. So if you are a store person, it's all the categories of store person within the agreement rather than just the one classification that's called specifically store person.
Correct.
And that applies across the board with regards to those classifications.
That's correct.
They are categories of occupations that attract the nauseous allowance.
Correct.
Okay. Look, I think that's a point that's worth emphasising, given that it may not have otherwise been clear. The multi-skilling allowance is another one that requires some action in terms of this year. So just as a reminder to members to whom that allowance applies.
So members would recall that in 2016, the multi-skilling allowance wasn't paid, but it was an entitlement and was an allowance in the previous agreement. So members may recall paying this allowance in 2015 and 2014. What's going to occur in this EBA is that this only applies to food and domestic services assistants and patient services assistants.
Food and domestic services assistants and patient services assistants only. When is that next payment due?
The first full pay period on or after the 13th of November 2017.
So that's a very curious date. Why the 13th of November?
You tell me.
Well, I was going to guess it was in tribute to the US Supreme Court's decision in 1956 that ended the Montgomery bus boycott. But I assume that may not be the case.
It may very well be, but it isn't in the implementation guide to that effect.
I believe it also marks the anniversary for the establishment of the Constitution of Greece. I think it works either way. So the first full pay period on or after 13th of November, very auspicious date for a range of reasons. There are then payments for that particular allowance in subsequent years.
Correct. So from the 13th of November, first full pay period on or after the 13th of November this year, the payment is $1,000. And that is to compensate that health services didn't pay the allowance in 2016. But for each year thereafter, health services have to pay a lump sum of $500.
Okay. So for the next item, I think we should just stare longingly at the trophy because this is the big action item for 2017, and that's the transition from the clerical and admin into the administrative and management stream, which occurs this year. When is that occurring?
From the first full pay period on or after the 1st of October 2017.
And when we talk about that transition, we're talking about which employees?
So these are your clerical workers. So otherwise they'd be classified as your clerical workers, Cs, Bs and As.
C, Bs and A. And in terms of what that translation is, so if I was a clerical worker grade C, I would translate to an administrative worker grade
1A. So the clause will facilitate the creation of a new management and admin pay code and classification. Our membership would recall that HS1 was previously the lowest and is still currently the lowest pay rate for the administrative workers and management section of this agreement. From the first full pay period on or after the 1st of October this year, the agreement facilitates the addition of an administrative worker grade 1A, which is a rate that is below the administrative worker grade 1, otherwise known as HS1. This classification will be coded as HS1A.
And there will be then also a translation for those who are clerical worker B, they'll translate to?
To HS1.
And those who are presently clerical worker A?
Will translate to HS2.
And so the effect of that translation is really to integrate that group into a single group?
Correct.
And that will then remove that perhaps that potential inconsistency as to whether and when to classify someone as a clerical employee and when to classify someone as an administrative employee, given that they might be doing comparable work. Mm. I think it's worth emphasising that there's a slightly different translation with respect to two of our members.
That's correct. So the Royal Women's and the Royal Children's Hospital have a separate and distinct pay code structure, and they'll experience a similar transition, but will be separate and distinct from the remainder of the Victorian public health sector.
So that's probably the big action item with regards to this agreement this year. Will there be other activities that will support that translation?
There will be. So over the next 2 months, we'll be working together with the EBA reference group to develop some material to assist our membership. So as you detailed before, the process would be is that VHA will work with our reference group and our membership to develop material to assist our membership. We'll then seek the feedback from the Health Workers Union and then present that to our wider membership through the HRER-IR monthly meetings. And also through the community app.
There are a couple of items that aren't date specific, but that must be done either during the life of the agreement or within a specified period of time. One of them concerns the consideration of a multiple employer pool of employees. Mm. What's the reason for that provision?
So the clause is about providing and maximising permanent employment across the health network. And it's to reduce unemployment, support additional hours for part-time employees that are highly skilled that wish to work across multiple health services.
It's an interesting one in the sense that there are times where it's 80-odd different health services, and there's times when there is the opportunity to act as an industry. And the effect of that clause seems to really seek to emphasise the acting as an industry. In terms of the parties are due to explore that idea during the life of the agreement, I would anticipate that in terms of coordinating available shifts, that technology is likely to be a part of that solution.
I would agree.
The other one that's due over the first 12 months of the agreement is the security and patient transport review. In terms of a review, what is it that we're talking about? Are we talking David and Margaret? Are we talking scores out of 10, thumbs up, thumbs down? What kind of process?
Look, I'm more of a believer in the red tomato and green tomato from the Channel 10 classic Ready, Steady, Cook.
I have to say that I'm strictly an MKR kind of guy, and so the finer nuances of the green tomato, red tomato scoring system are lost on me. Just in terms of practical steps for this year around that review, where does it start?
So the VHAA and the Health Workers Union are to meet and develop and commence the process within the first 12 months of the agreement. It's intended that that will form part of the discussions during the agreement implementation process through the SDP-PWG discussions.
It's interesting in that it's really a process that demands a certain level of curiosity as to the way things work, and there are only sort of a certain number of circumstances under which that occurs. Just in terms of the classifications that fall within the scope of that review, obviously security is one of those, but what are the other occupations?
Ambulance drivers, drivers themselves, and orderlies and cleaners.
Okay, so they'll all be part of the mix when we meet with the HWU to commence that review process during the course of this year.
Correct.
Okay. Daniel, is there anything else with regards to the action items that arise from, or the actor items that arise from this particular agreement over 2017 you'd like to raise?
Look, we'd just welcome that any of our membership that aren't part of the Health and Allied Management and Admin reference group, that they're more than welcome to participate. The reference groups are held on the last Thursday of each month from 2 p.m. till 4 p.m. We provide an online or telephone participation process where you can attend remotely. Otherwise, you're welcome to attend the VHA office. offices here in Footscray and participate.
Okay, so it's not too late for people to participate in the EBA reference group. The best way to get the most up-to-date information, of course, is to sign up to VHA Community and select the Health and Allied Services Managers and Admin group as a way of getting those updates as to all of these activities that are occurring over this year and beyond.
Yep.
Daniel, thank you for taking the time to join me to have that discussion. And I'd like to present you with this trophy as a memento of our time together.
Oh, thank you very much, Stuart. Thank you.